Don't apologize, just wasting your time. I hope Wichita works out for you. You're gonna need some, cause baby, we're done. Today I stopped caring what you do. So have a good
night. Hey, I'm Logan Mize, and you're hanging out with just Donald on Nashville Hits Collecting Dust.
Well, hey, let's get started. Hey, guys, it's Nashville Hits Collecting Dust. Thanks for tuning in. Really excited today. I'm sitting down with Logan Mize. Hey, buddy.
How's it going?
Good. Hey, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
I honestly feel like I know you, but I have technically never met you. You know how you have mutual friends and, you know, you always hear stories about this guy. And sooner or later, you're like, yeah, I know that guy. Yeah. And you walked in this morning. I'm like, yeah, I don't know you at all. But I felt like it. Anyways.
Yeah, no, I think that's a mutual feeling. But I do have to say, I guess now you have better music up. But when I first walked in, you had some really old tunes of mine playing, and I've kind of wanted to cower in the corner a little bit.
Well, but here's the thing: it's Hits Collecting Dust. So
those weren't hits, man.
But maybe they were collecting dust, and we just needed to get them back out for a minute, and then
let's just let them collect the dust.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right.
We're all about talking about where you are in life right now, but we were saying, hey, let's see where he came from and the whole journey part of it. Anyway, so it's cool. I'm really glad we got you in. I know that you're a busy guy and got a lot of stuff going on, so I'm excited to talk about that either way. But our good mutual buddy, Blake Chaffin, who's a great songwriter, I know you and him write a lot together, right?
Yeah, we do. He's one of the best, man. He's great to write with. Good friend, too.
He's one of those guys that you know at any point in time, something's going to come out of his mouth that's either unbelievably hilarious or profound. Or maybe one in the same.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And he underestimates himself too, which is, I think, you know, I don't get annoyed with him because he's just a great dude, but he is the most, if anyone's ever underestimated him and underestimated themselves more, I'd be surprised. So, yeah.
Yeah, he's
big
good.
Shout out to Blake Chaffin.
We were sitting around the other day, actually it was a year or so ago. I think it was at Hangout Fest, Kevin. And he literally just woke up and out of nowhere said, man, I feel so good today. I'm going to take my one a day twice. It was just one of those things where it was like,
that's very
genius, funny, profound all at the same time. You know, but that's the type of guy he is. That's awesome. But Logan, I'd love to learn more about you. I feel like obviously a lot of people know you already, and I don't want this to be the, hey, you know, tell me, you know, do you like long walks on the beach? But you moved to Nashville. You've been here, what, since 2008? Originally from Kansas.
2006, I moved here. Yeah, originally from Kansas, and I went to Illinois for a while. I was in Southern Illinois. I was playing football there and going to school. Yeah, well, okay. I was on the football team and I was enrolled in school.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah, but I was already into music at the time, you know. And I started playing piano at 6, so music was something I was always really into. I was a big listener. But it wasn't until I was a teenager that I really wanted to play it. I even hated piano lessons as a kid. I just wanted to listen to Elton John records, you know. And so when I got to Southern Illinois, by the time I got there, I was over sports and tired of going. It felt like a full-time job. And I was trying to book gigs at the local clubs and going out and doing that. So I would skip football practice on Monday and drive. It was only 3 hours from Carbondale to, well, I guess it still is, 3 hours to Carbondale to Nashville. So I'd skip practice Monday, come down here, and wait in line to play the Bluebird Cafe.
Wow.
It was the songs that I'd written and I thought were amazing. And I thought I was going to be Tim McGraw overnight. And
yeah.
You know, whatever stupid 19-year-old kids think. So, and I just got, I had the bug, man. So I loved it and I kept writing songs, but I was too chicken. I dropped out of the school there after about 2 years and then quit the football team mid-season. I wrote a letter to everybody on my squad and my coach and bailed out. And
wow.
But I was too chicken to come to Nashville. So I went back to Kansas and I was living in my hometown framing houses.
Okay.
And so I'd drive to Wichita every day, framing houses. And every day that I drove in, and I love the job and I love doing physical labor because it's just, you know, you're outside all day. But every day that I drove to work, I felt more and more like a coward. Like, I quit a call. You know, I wanted to play Division I football, made it there, quit. Now I'm framing houses, and I'm supposed to be in Nashville. So after about 6 months of that, I finally worked up the nerve. Didn't work up enough of money to really make it here and do anything, but I had enough to get here,
yeah.
And that's all that mattered. So I showed up in Nashville in August of 2006.
Gosh, I think that's when you know what I just heard right there, Kevin, and I've heard this a lot. A lot of people will say, gosh, I don't know how or when or if I should pursue my dream. I always say, when you're miserable enough, you will.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's almost like how you know, mm-hmm. I think, because, I mean, you don't always have to be the bravest person in the world to pursue your dream. Sometimes you have to avoid it just long enough to where the pain's great enough that you're like, screw it.
Yeah.
I have to, right?
Right.
So that's that's a good example right there. It's like, you know, you were the one saying, hey, I was too chicken, but at the end of the day, you just were there and you're like, I don't even care if I have enough. I have enough money to get there.
Right.
I'll figure it out from there, right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome. And hey, we've all got those times where we're like, I can't believe I did that or said that. But I almost feel like that's part of the affirmation as well. Yeah. Is that when you get here, you know, that belief, you gotta have it.
Absolutely,
right. If you don't
yeah.
have that, you might as well go home. I mean, other people that are probably seeing you are like, yeah, I know where you've been. But if you don't at least start there, you're probably really in trouble, right?
Right.
So
right.
That's awesome story. So you started just playing around at the Bluebird and then moved here. Did you ramen noodles? Was that your diet for a while? Or?
I knew one guy from Southern Illinois, and we would go. So when the first early gigs I was putting together living in Carbondale, it was just me and one accompany guy, and he played fiddle. You know, he was pretty good. You know, he can kind of pick up and just carry on with me. We didn't really have specific parts. I would just play rhythm, and he would just kind of play little fill parts. And we started getting gigs around Carbondale, and he ended up, when I left, he moved to Nashville. Like, he just came straight down here. He dropped out as well, and he's still in town. I think he works at Warner, if I remember right. But he, at the time, he was working at a bar. He was the only guy I knew in town. I showed up at 3 a.m. I had his, this is how old this makes me feel. When I came to town, it wasn't like I had a cell phone charger.
I got you beat,
Logan. You know, well, yeah, you do by a few years.
You didn't have to affirm that so quick.
Yeah.
All right,
hold on. Let me get my
cool.
calculator.
Yeah.
correct.
It's fine.
But it was, I had a piece of paper with his phone number written on it. And I'm pretty sure he still had a landline at his apartment, which I don't know why you would pay for a landline, but I guess back then maybe you did. But
bundle pricing.
Yeah, bundle pricing. Yeah, that was right. That's right. They had like the three: internet, cable, and yeah, phone. But
for you kids out there listening, it was a phone attached to your house is why they called it a,
right.
a
we'll
landline.
We'll throw a picture up later.
Right. We'll put some in the show notes. All right, go ahead.
Perfect. So I had a cell phone, but it wasn't charged. I got to the exit on Broadway and 12th. Tiger Mart there was a cell payphone. Called the number on the payphone. No one answered a couple times, and I'm like, you know what, I have his address, I'm just going to drive out there. He was in Hermitage. I showed up, the gate was open. It was like a gated apartment complex, and I go to the apartment, I start pounding on the window, and the light was on, and I look through the curtain, and I can see him, and he's asleep on the couch. So he finally gets up off the couch, and he comes over, and he's like, man, I really didn't think you were coming, but come on in. And he took me downstairs, and he had a little laundry area on the floor, and he's like, this is you right here. You can stay here till you, you know, get on your feet and figure out a job situation or whatever. So I think we stayed up all night, and I brought some party favors, and then the next day I hit the ground running trying to find a job. And I landed a truck driving job in Hendersonville. So that was, so I drove a truck during the day, all day, and then I'd come downtown and just try to find an open mic night to play that.
Wow.
Love it.
So I did that for months and months. And until I finally met a guy, and we decided to start a band. I feel like this story is going to get really long, but.
Well, it's a good story. So
yeah,
like,
I don't know.
So, like, I'm pumped at this moment.
So
you know. Like,
absolutely. You can't leave the details out for sure.
Okay. Well, we started a band. I started a band with this guy named Will. We met at a writer's night. It was at a place on 3rd Street called Past Perfect. I don't even know if it's still there. I haven't been down there in a while. We played there every Wednesday, and we just kind of struck up a kind of a brotherhood kind of thing, and And we were like, hey, let's do this together. We'll start a band. We don't really know who's going to sing. Maybe it'll be like the band. Maybe we'll all sing. I don't know. It's going to be fun. So we just had fun writing songs together. And we tried to find a bass player. And then we had a fiddle player, I think. And then the weirdest part about the whole thing is I grew up across the street in Clearwater, Kansas, where I grew up. These two kids were my best friends, Jeff and Jason Brady. And they had an older brother that I didn't really know. He was quite a bit older than us. And he was going to petroleum engineer school at University of Kansas. He was going to be a petroleum engineer. And he was 6 months away from graduating. But I knew that he was a drummer and that he had played in the drum line at the high school. So I'm here in Nashville living with my friend Will, who I met at a writer's night. We're trying to put a band together. And I'm like, hey, I know a guy from my hometown in Clearwater, Clearwater, Kansas. He might be able to play the drum. And he's like, well, call him, man. So I call Jeff, my friend from high school, and he's like, I'll give you Jeremy's number. He's at KU. He's about to finish college, like his master's degree or something. He's going to make, like, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars right now. So I called him and said, hey, man, I'm in Nashville. I'm starting a band. You should come out. And
that was your sales pitch.
Yeah. And he did.
That's awesome.
So he quit college and he came out, and we had a nice little run there for a while. I probably wrote some terrible songs, but we got some gigs. You know, we had a fake booking agent, and I had a girl's name and a girl's email. And
Did you make phone calls?
No, I did not make phone calls.
Because you were immediately about to give us your girl voice.
No. I had people that would help me out. We had a girl in the band that if I ever had to do anything, but her name was Brooke Spaulding. I don't know where I came up with that name.
Spaulding.
Yeah, and Brooke would book us a lot of shows. And so I think our first one, we were opening for Pat Green at the Granada in Lawrence, Kansas, I think. So we all piled in my Suburban. And we went and we just started doing that for a long time.
Logan, when you win like the biggest award ever, will you please give a thank you to Brooke Spaulding?
Brooke Spaulding, absolutely.
I mean, I have to give credit really for my career and success to Brooke Spaulding.
Yeah,
nobody's gonna know.
But everyone around him is gonna be like, Brooke Spaulding.
Well, the best part of it, I didn't know how any part of the business worked. At the time, I don't even know if I knew what a publishing deal was or what a booking agent really did. But when I was when I got to the venue, I think they paid us $150. You know, then I was like, "Bam, we're getting paid."
And rich,
of course, yeah. When you're 21, you're not thinking like how much you spent in fuel to get there. Which
right,
I probably had a negative.
What are expenses, balance. Right?
But we got there, and I didn't know what to say to the club owner, and I still know him to this day. I've played his club a lot of times since then. But and I don't know if he remembers this band that I was in, but I remember going into his office and being like, hey, I didn't know if he expected the booking agent to be there, Brooke to be there.
Right.
I was like, Brooke, you know, she couldn't make it, but... I just remember fumbling through something and then afterwards feeling so stupid. And I'm sure he knew that there was no such thing as Brooke Spaulding. But
I'm not going to lie. I'm taking notes right now.
It's genius, though,
it
right?
Really
like, I mean, it's. I think it reminds me of, didn't Big and Rich like hire camera crews and stuff to follow
I've heard
them
stories.
Around?
I can't confirm
before
or deny.
They were big?
I can't confirm or deny exactly. I had heard limos and stuff like that. But the whole point was two things. I've heard both these. One's perception, right?
Right.
And then, but the second one, and this is a famous Frank Sinatra quote, is that Frank Sinatra used to say that he played Frank Sinatra until he became Frank Sinatra. Mm-hmm. And it was more of a belief thing.
Right.
And so I don't know if that means making up a fake agent or not. But at the end of the day, what I'm saying is like you're living the lifestyle that you know you want to have. And so therefore, when you live it, you become it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. That's kind of what I heard from that. That's what I took from it.
Yeah. I mean, was it like it's a credibility thing, right? Like,
yeah, well,
you got to go through Brooke.
Yeah. And I knew so many guys that were on my level that were trying to get. You know, I remember feeling like it was impossible to get to William Morris or CAA or somebody to actually take me seriously. And I knew so many guys in the same spot that were just trying to book their own shows and having no luck. And so, honestly, where the name came from is that Clarence Spaulding, the manager, had kind of like been really nice to me early on and brought me into his office, and he's like, "Hey, man, you know, you got a long way to go, but you know, I'll be your cheerleader in the corner, kind of thing." And so I was like, "Spalding, that name really sounds good. I'll just change it. I'll just have a Brooke Spalding. Maybe they'll think she's related to Clarence Spalding. Oh, yeah. You know, whatever."
That's awesome.
And that's where it came from.
Great story, man. That's an awesome story.
I mean, did you get a lot more like instant responses about shows and stuff?
It worked. I mean, not, you know, we had notebooks full. I mean, just pages and pages full of clubs with numbers, venue manager, and we'd call all of them, just cold call all of them. And I mean, and once we got the contact info, or we made sure on the phone that somebody was there, you know, we'd hang up or whatever, and then hit him with an email from Brooke. And I mean, it didn't work everywhere, but it worked a lot of places. You know.
Kevin Super Sick McCarty is my non-legal counsel, just in case you're wondering.
I did attend a law class in college.
One of them.
I didn't go back.
Right. So he
I dropped
my,
out, but
he's my official non-legal
basically me
counsel.
Being a lawyer.
Yeah.
If I can say so myself as a lawyer, that's legal.
Oh my gosh. So, hey, we could really ramble, I mean, for hours, there's no doubt, but I have to get to at least two of Blake's questions.
Yeah.
And then I have my three questions.
Back.
And then we'll go back.
I love it.
Sound good?
Yeah.
All right. So, Blake's our mutual buddy, and like we like to do a little due diligence before guests come in, right? I don't want to be, and this is nothing against any other host or interviewer, I just don't want to ask the same questions that everybody's done, right?
Yeah.
So let's keep you on your toes a little bit. But we had reached out to, and I have no idea what this means, all right? But Blake said, well, you probably should ask him about how can oven mitts work for or work as smoking gloves? Is there a story behind that?
There's two, and I think he's mixing two of them up. But the oven,
he's not feeling well today, so maybe
he is sick. So
the oven mitt is a different thing. That man, I don't know if we want to go into that. but the glove. So there, when me and Blake first started hanging out, we were partying a lot, and you know, my wife Jill, she's never been fond of, let's say I had a nice buzz and I wanted to go out and burn a heater, as we call it, you know, smoke a cigarette or something.
Mm-hmm.
Not my wife at the time. I don't even know if we may have been dating or something at the time, but it doesn't matter. She's never been a fan of it.
She just not
so,
happy. Right.
So I had a special glove that I would, you know, I'd be like, hey, I got to go take the trash out. And me and, you know, Blake and them would be over there hanging out. Me and Blake are going to go out, and she showed me this bush that might have, you know, some sort of disease. I'd put this glove on and we'd go out and burn one. And that
way it's not on your hands.
Yeah. That way it's not on my hands and I don't smell. And that took like 5 minutes and she
figured that out.
But I just kept doing it for, you know, the sake of, well, you know.
I mean, I had to be. Listen, if I see you with just one glove on, that's kind of funny.
Right.
So I'm definitely calling you out
for
it.
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's amazing.
So you were recently on Bobby Bones?
I was.
How was that?
It was cool. I didn't know much about Bobby Bones early on, and everybody, you know, he was a DJ in Wichita for a long time.
Oh, I know that.
Yeah. And so I think he was on Power 93.9, which is the rap station there. And everybody was a huge fan of him. And I remember everybody talking about Bobby Bones, you know, all the time. But I just didn't listen. I don't even know. I was a fan of a lot of Red Dirt Texas stuff that was coming up. Not the bad ones, but, you know, like Randy Rogers Band, Wade Bowen, and some of those guys. So there was like a little Red Dirt station they played up there. So I never heard any of Bobby's stuff and didn't know who he was until he started blowing up and kind of becoming a national personality.
Mm-hmm.
So, I became aware of him later, but man, it was so cool to go on his show and like see what he's built, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a few people that listen to him.
Yeah,
I'm sure he's listening to my show.
Just on the ACMs.
Yeah, but I'm sure I'm on the way there and back. He's probably listening to my podcast. Wouldn't you say that?
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm
just assuming. That's all I'm doing, really.
I don't think he has anything else to do.
Right.
So, like, it's just default.
Exactly.
Right. Like, okay. Morning breakfast kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
That's great.
Well, man.
Let's get back.
Yeah, I have a lot of your stories, I guess. What's the name of your car?
Glenn.
Why? Why did you name your car Glenn?
So this goes to Blake. When I was telling you, me and Blake like to party a little bit. And
I heard that.
You've, sneak out with our smoking gloves and all that. towards the end of the night, usually it would be like we'd have a writer's round we'd do, or we'd be writing during the day, or there'd be something going on. And usually after hours, we'd go back to my place and we'd get on eBay or Craigslist. And we'd get on there and just look for station wagons, like, you know, 70s and 80s model station wagons. And we'd bid on them on eBay. There was one, I remember when there was one in Montana, we thought we were going to win the auction for like $800. And so the goal was we were going to get it. We were going to win a station wagon on eBay.
First of all, can I just say that when you said, hey, we like to party, and then we go back and get on Craigslist and eBay, that the last thing that went through my head, the very last thing that went through my head was to look for station wagons. But, you know, to each their own, you know?
We're good, right? Like, yeah. Tonight's over. We're
yeah. Are we ready to go home? Because point, you know what I feel like doing, Kevin? We need to
I've
go.
I've heard there's a whole refreshed page of station wagons. And like, the 88s just came out with this new magazine.
I have a good feeling about tonight, Kevin. This it's been a great night. And God, I just feel like Craigslist is going to be hopping with station wagons tonight. So
I never realized how stupid that sounded.
Like, the beauty is you are super original.
Yeah.
From Brooke Spalding to being the only people on the planet that probably are like, it's nightcap, right?
Well,
station wagons are coming
up. Here's the thing. Technically not, because they haven't won one yet in an auction. Like,
yeah.
So maybe there's a little, I don't know.
Right.
Maybe
right.
You're onto something.
So anyway, and the goal was we're going to get the station wagon, and we're going to drive around all through the Great Plains, you know, Texas to Canada, whatever it is, and we're going to do a documentary and on these on the people from the Great Plains, you know, because we've always had this fascination with them. And I think there's an earlier podcast of yours where Blake plays Welcome to Prairieville, which is kind of a description of that character.
Episode 36.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Good job, Kevin.
But anyway, that was our goal. And then fast forward a few years. I have an album that comes out. That album title was called Nobody in Nashville, but we did a release tour that started in Blake's hometown, which is Hayes, Kansas, out in western Kansas. And we had a good college following there. And we were playing this club. It was sold out that night, and we were really excited to play all the new tunes. And I was busy doing, like, you know, changing guitar strings and just getting with the sound right. And we had a whole bunch of extra stuff going on because it was an album release. And out front, this big 89 white Chevy station wagon pulls up. And I'm thinking, no way, that thing's badass. And so
it was like music playing in the background. It had this kind of aura around
it. Oh, man,
it
really did. And I walked out and looked at it. And on the hood was my album cover. Me, really big on the front, and Logan Mize, Nobody in Nashville. And there were sunflowers all down the side and a map of Kansas.
What?
And everything. So I freak out, and the first thing I honestly thought was his brother, Blake's younger brother, does demolition derbies, and I thought that he was going to enter the car in a demo derby, and he just decided to put my album cover on the hood. And they're like, no, man, this is yours. This is Blake's like, I bought this car for us, man. But, you know, we finally did it. We finally got a station wagon.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
hit our peak.
We have arrived, Kevin.
And, so the first thing,
I love it.
I freak out. I'm elated for a good 15 minutes, just over the moon. And so I'm like, well, we got to get in and drive it. You know, everything else just went out the window. So we went. Me and Blake got in it, and we drove to the liquor store, and we got an Oklahoma armrest, as we like to call it. Which is the 30 pack in between, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And so,
makes sense.
Yeah. And so we got that, and we came back to the venue, and we just had the best time ever. But Glenn, his name is Glenn. The station wagon came from, we were driving that whole week on the album release tour all through the, I think we were in Nebraska and Kansas mostly, but we pulled up at a show, to load into a theater. And we were inside, and we were trying to discuss the name all day. Like, what are we going to name this car? It needs a name. And at one point, we're driving. I'm like, he feels like a Glenn or something with two N's. And
not one. Yeah.
Two N's. And we start laughing. You know, he's like, that's so dumb. And then we park at this theater. We go in. We do load in, sound check. We come back out. We're going to go grab some dinner. And we walk out of the front of the theater, and Glenn, the car, the white Chevy station
Glenn,
right at the time.
That's Glenn.
Is parked underneath of a sign that says Glenn's Music.
Oh my God.
It, right in front of a music store that says Glenn's Music. We did not see it when we pulled in because we were in a hurry, and it's Glenn with two N's. And Glenn sitting right underneath it were like, that's it. That's
good. I mean, that's, yeah. That's fantastic. You didn't have a choice.
It was, yeah, and now I have picks, even Glenn the Wagon.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. That's awesome.
Yeah. Somebody made these in Arkansas, so, yeah.
Well, so now that we're on Glenn the Wagon tour, I think something you and I have talked a lot about is just some of the things that you've done a little differently on this tour than I think is, I guess, traditionally what is done in the music industry in regards to touring, right? So mm-hmm. I don't know if you can talk a little bit about what you did utilizing social media, your iPhone, live streaming, all of those things to really make that happen, which was just something that I found super impressive, thinking outside the box a little bit and just looking at the traditional ways of doing things and saying, why don't I try something a little bit different?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you elaborate a little bit, because that was damn awesome.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, I've always been kind of a blue collar middle class and came up as a middle class dude, not really upper middle class, not really lower middle class, just kind of right down the middle. And I've always found myself in these very just comfortable, normal feeling situations. And the music business has been no different. You know, I've never felt like a starving artist, but I've never really felt like, oh man, I've really made it, you know? So I don't know if it's because of the position I'm in, where I'm still relatively anonymous, but at the same time, I have enough going to where I can and create something. But it just basically came from, I didn't feel like, from the number of reactions we were getting with music that was coming out or social media-wise, I didn't feel like the number of shows we were getting was translating. I felt like there was a lot of people that were not, I don't know, it just didn't add up to me. So I decided to do my own little experiment. I got on social media and said, hey, I'm going to do a tour, but you're going to book it. And yeah. I'm going to do it in my station wagon. And here's an email address. I just created an email address. If you want me to come play a private party, or if you have a bar or a venue, anything like that, email me and I'll come. I'll do an acoustic show. You know, I'll bring maybe part of the band, or maybe I'll come by myself and let's just see what happens. And so I wasn't sure. You know, I was hoping.
You put this out just like on your social media.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and I, because, you know, I kept talking to the agent, and I love the folks at William Morris, but they kept telling me, you know, we're kind of maxed out. We don't want to start dipping into your big markets too much. And so I was like, I think there's more out there. And I was right. So I think within like 5 minutes, we had 180 something emails. And then it just kept adding up throughout the whole day. So I got really overwhelmed and I started trying to go sift through it and figure out which ones were serious, which ones were not, which ones were like, hey, man, I like your song. Whatever, you know,
yeah.
Delete. I'm like, thank you, but, you know, I'm trying to book a tour here. And so it got overwhelming, so I called my tour manager. He came up from Mississippi. We sifted through the whole thing, and we ended up booking, I think it was like 40 dates in 2 months. So pretty extensive tour, you know, and we were mostly in the Midwest, anywhere from Arkansas to Northern Illinois. But it just turned into this really cool thing, and I decided to document it all. So I took my iPhone out, and I tried to film everything that I could. I made like a little intro reel, and mm-hmm. it's pretty stupid, but it's supposed to be. You know, this is the entertainment industry, so
it's
I love them. Like yeah, it's captive, and you like I'm interested, and it's funny, but it's all those things where we talk about it every time. It's document over create.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, there's a balance, but I think that's a big thing we talk about. It's just documenting it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that was really cool that I found is, you know, I've put out a couple full-length albums, and I've put out, you know, I was on Sony for a while, and you do kind of what the label wants you to do. But there's always been so many songs that I've loved that I've written, and that, you know, someone's always like, hey, you can't put that out. It's too singer-songwriter. You can't do this or you can't do that. Well, when you book a tour in your station wagon, you can do whatever the hell you want. So, you know, we're out there playing whatever the people want to hear, and they know songs that I never released that they could just look up live performances on YouTube. So it turns out there's a whole slew of people out there that they're starved for that. And they're not, you know, in urban areas. They're out, you know, they're kind of sprawled out in these little towns that are never going to have a concert come through.
Yeah.
So, and it wasn't like I was rolling into town like a celebrity. It was like, it felt really cool, like coming into town to hang out with my friends for an evening and just you know, have fun and cut up and play some songs. And I'd take a break halfway through and we'd play beer pong and,
yeah,
you know, and we played a few clubs and bars in there too, that were, you know, kind of big events, but, most of the time we were going to like somebody's hay shed and,
yeah.
and you know, they'd have like 300 friends out and it'd just be like
wow.
keg party, like high school, but you know, a little bit more, they listened more than anyone ever does. And if you go to a big festival, everyone's oh, just sure. there acting crazy, partying, and
right.
you're at somebody's hay shed and everyone's just stone silent listening to like a ballad you wrote, you know, and it's like,
that's cool.
This is cool.
Like true fans.
Yeah. And
yeah.
I don't know. Maybe a lot of people listening to this don't know this. I have seen though a couple of times when if you're not booking yourself, I didn't know this was the case until I actually went out on tour a couple of times, but you're not always sure if people are going to show up or, mm-hmm. you know, if they know. The cool part about it is like your fans were, you knew,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they were asking you, you were going to them.
Right.
Where a lot of times I know as an artist, you're like, you have a booking agent and you go, I hope it sells out. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope people show up, you know, depending on the market. I know, the first time I even realized that, of course this might be different, but you know, it was like going into Texas. It's like,
right.
you don't ever really know as a Nashville artist,
right.
How you're when you go into Texas, yeah. if people even care.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you right. know, it's different, right?
Well, but. I think the other thing is you kind of get a good sense of your value a little bit that you, I think, from our last conversation, you know, you were like, man, and we won't get into specifics on the financials, but you're like, I can make more, charging more
mm-hmm.
With my true fans in front of me, and I can control that versus...
Right.
having all of those things handled by somebody else.
Right.
But then I think you were telling me like, you know, I started doing it this way and I realized, man, I can maybe charge a little bit more because my fans really want me there.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily like I felt like, oh, you guys really want, but I felt like it was the experience more mm-hmm. than anything, more than me. And it was the car, you know, Glenn, there was, and that's what I loved is the focus wasn't on me. I had like something else to put it on. It was
yep.
Glenn was the main feature. That's he was the main character.
Wow.
Glenn's the main character and you're Batman and the fans,
yeah.
they're Robin. And I'm just kind of here as the mediator.
What, was Brooke still around?
Brooke, no.
Brooke wasn't on this one.
She retired.
No, Brooke, okay. Yeah, Brooke retired, man. She had a long, illustrious career and she had to get out of the business. But we rolled into these towns, man, and had a great time. And I don't, you know, I'm not saying that that's, you know, the pinnacle. I think that that's a really cool step on the way to, you know, where I want to go. But, man, it's just really cool to make connections that you're never going to make if you're just showing up to a club hoping people show up. You know,
yeah.
I knew every night, you know, on a Tuesday night in somebody's machine shed in Iowa, I knew that there was going to be 300 and something people packed into this thing, sweating their nuts off, mm-hmm. drinking PBR, like
yep.
ready to go, you know?
Yeah.
So it was great.
Man, and that's fun to play to.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know? God, that's awesome. That's a great story. Man, I bet you have like a ton of that. I wanted to do this segment called Nashville, We Have a Problem. You know, Houston, We Have a
yeah,
Problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, most of your time on
that's
the
good.
Road is in between stages.
Yeah.
Right? And once you get to the stage, you love it. But I can only imagine... touring with Glenn, was Glenn always reliable, I guess? Was Glenn always saying, hey, man, I'm going to get you from point A to point B? Or were there times?
There were times, but we missed one show, and we subbed it with a minivan. And luckily, we were close to, we were out by Wichita. It was right around Thanksgiving, and my wife and two kids had come back to Wichita area. She's from Andale, so the minivan was out there. We were coming from somewhere western Kansas, and we were coming through to go to eastern Kansas, dropped off the station wagon. It was going, we couldn't get it over 20 miles an hour.
Nice.
Picked up the minivan, drove to the next gig, and then came back, and by the next day we had it fixed. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I got to get at least these three questions, and then we'd love to hear you play us something. So
yeah.
The three that I ask every guest on the show, there are no right or wrong answers. So,
okay.
But this is a lot of what I love. Obviously, I love music and you know, that type of talent. But really what we are providing to the audience as well is like, hey, music may not be my passion, but I can learn from someone like you to pursue mine. Right.
Right.
And that is these questions. So it's like, so if you could have coffee with yourself, knowing what you know now, you know, right when you decided, hey, I'm not framing houses anymore, I'm moving to Nashville. Right. Yeah. What would you tell yourself?
Be patient and just don't force anything, you know, don't put it. I mean, and I'm not saying I regret putting out a record when I was 23, but the best songs weren't necessarily there. And, you know, kind of slopping some lines together and maybe a little bit of pandering because you know who's going to be initially listening.
Right.
You know, I would say just be patient and wait till you get a little bit better and hone your craft before you start trying to take off running.
Right. You know? Do you think at the time, did you know that it probably wasn't your best work, but it was like, it's just time, right? Is that kind of what you're telling yourself is like, you knew, but you did it anyway type thing?
Maybe, but I've always lived so in the present that almost to a fault that, you know, I don't think I cared if somebody would have told me. Even if I would have been sitting there having coffee with myself, I'd have been like, yeah, whatever, dude, get out of here. I got stuff to do.
And that was my next question. Would you think you would have listened to you?
No.
No. That's all.
No one ever would.
No.
I don't know. It's
always the same. Like, you should, you know, we tell you all the time, you shouldn't date that girl or that guy. And you're like,
Yeah.
I'm going to keep doing it.
Right.
And then you're like, I should have listened to this.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What about the best advice somebody else has ever given you that you kind of hold on to and live by?
The best advice anybody has ever given me. Man, my grandfather always just said to be honest. And that has gotten me out of so many pickles. Is just, you know, the second you start to feel like, you know, beating around the bush or, you know, maybe telling an untruth, if you will, just straight up say exactly what happened or what you're thinking, because it's so much easier.
Yeah.
You never happen to like dodge a web of, you know, lies or anything. You don't have to remember anything. It's just like, yeah, I just told the truth. Okay. Yeah. I can move on.
That's really, it's profound in a way that sometimes I think we hear that and it we're used to hearing it, but so you don't really listen, hear it, mm-hmm. right? Because you think, oh, well, yeah. And you think those are really big lies that you, as long as I just don't do the really big ones.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
But it's actually not probably. I know it's harder in general, just day in, day out, where it's like these little ones that are maybe not even lies, just not whole truths. And then before you know it, it ends up being.
And then you got to remember all of it.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well,
and we won't count Brooks.
I was
as
about
a lie.
To say, I was
Brooks
really,
not a lie.
Well, Brooks kind of.
Brooks not lying. It's
Brooks is just another.
She's an embellishment.
She's an embellishment.
Yeah.
You know, never hurt anybody.
Right.
It just helped.
Right. Right?
Like, Brooke may be, you know, a part of Logan that he desires to truly be.
I think you're on something right there.
I'm going to stop right there. But yeah. I'm just throwing that out there. So. That's awesome. All right. Well, my favorite one is finish this statement, Logan. Donald, Kevin, seriously, if you really knew me, though, you would know.
You would know. See, I didn't know we were going to talk so much about my station wagon, Glenn, because the answer to that would have been that I'm secretly in love with old school station wagons.
That cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, that cat's way out of the bag. So if you really knew me, you would know. That's really tough now that, you know, I don't know if I have, I feel like I'm such an open book that I don't know, what the answer to that would be now.
Well, Blake did say, you know, super easy to talk to, very open book. So we get it, but there's probably also something that you're like,
I don't know if we want that 2% that everybody hides, but maybe we do. Any weird, like, I'll give you mine as an example, that food for me is just a catalyst for the sauce that I put on it. Like, I'm a sauce guy. I love sauce.
I do too. I love sauce.
And, you know, if you really knew me, Kevin knows that. It's like, we go out to eat and it's like, throw all the ketchup, mustard, everything down on Donald's side of the table because I'm going to be asking for it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I know what mine is. I have a really, really weird problem with sounds of people eating. So, and it's not like, I'm annoyed, and it's not with everybody. It's just in particular.
Huh.
For instance, every now and then I'll hear like a weird slurpy noise or something, and it does something to me physically. Where like, it's like I feel like drop kicking my chair, and like, you know, screaming profanity. Or, you know, and I never say it out loud, but it's just like, it's so bad that I feel like there's a really loud fire alarm going off in my head.
And the thing is like, you can't say that it's someone eating chips or it's,
no,
you don't know what it is.
You never know what it's going to be, but it happens all the time. And, you know, it's so bad that, you know, I'm worried that it's always written all over my face, and it's not their problem. It's my problem. Cause like I'll be eating and I'll get annoyed with my own self.
Oh my God.
The eating noise that I make.
Yes.
And I'll get so angry with myself. That's pretty weird. There's got to be actual definition. That's probably a psychotic disorder.
I am so intrigued right now and nervous and really glad I didn't provide food for this episode.
I was just trying to look it up, but there's too much science here.
Yeah. There's no way to spin that one.
And I will say it's equal. I get annoyed with myself, with my own eating noises as much as anyone else's. So it's not like I'm like singling someone out.
Hold on. I have a follow-up. So have you and your wife ever gotten in fights over it?
Yeah.
Because I feel like it hits the temper button.
Yeah.
Right? I'm not saying you have one, but all of us have something that just sets us off, yeah. Right? So, I mean, you've had breakfast, lunch,
quit
dinner a
few times. Quit slurping so much!
You know, she is the one person, and this is weird, but my wife is the one person that I can say that until last night, I've never... ever had any sort of weird annoyance with the way she eats or anything. And so, but last night it was really late and the kids have been like atrocious this week, you know, like not sleeping and whatever. So we were probably tired and we were trying to do something on the computer and go to bed. And she went and got a bowl of cereal and she like slurped it over my shoulder looking. And I just about like launched the computer through the
window. Oh my gosh.
That's the only time.
The clanking and the slurping. I get it, man. Like it is an awful sound. Oh, if you're like kind of tired, there has to be science tied to triggers.
Maybe, but I feel better now because you two aren't normal. So I'm just playing.
The one other one is if you're watching a movie and when they try to embellish audio and there's a fire going and they get audio of the fire crackling. You never know what I'm talking about. Like that drives me nuts just as bad.
That's normally a relaxing sound.
It's awful.
But to most people, I will play a roaring fire on this TV at night and you can't feel it, but to hear it is relaxing.
Yeah, in real life, it's not bad. It's when they like try to get the audio just perfect, and then it's a scene, it fades in, there's fire crackling, and it's making all these noises. It's just like,
Logan, on any Michael Bay movies, just like reviews, he's like, that stupid fire crackling is awful, Michael.
I can just see like hanging out with Logan, all of a sudden he gets up and drop kicks something, and I'm like, what just happened?
Is anyone eating? Is there a fire around? Look around.
Just weird stuff. It's weird.
That's great. See?
Hey, now that's a good if you really knew me there. I love that. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm excited. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Man, this has been great fun. And now my favorite part, which is to get really to hear do what you do best.
Yeah.
So tell us about a song that, you know, you like. It can be really any song. We always say one way or the other, but honestly, it's you can do whatever you want.
Okay. So. Well, I'm actually torn. I was going to play Welcome to Prairieville. That's me and Blake's song, but like I said, he played it on here earlier.
Yeah.
So I feel like I should play something different. I have a song that just came out on my EP. It's called Catch a Fish, and I want to play that. Or there's one about a girl that I was dating in Denton, Texas, called Have a Good Life. And that's old. I wrote that in 2008, and it's never come out. But so I'm still trying to decide.
Oh, gosh. Man. Do you have even like a 51% lean on either one of them?
I kind of want to do the old one.
About do the girl. Old stuff.
Yeah.
Let's do
Hell
it.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
All right, I'm on a break. We'll tune up, and we'll do it.
Perfect.
Awesome. I tried to love you all the way through your swinging moods and your stubborn mind. The stunt in Wichita was the last straw. Gotta cut my losses and say goodbye. So have a good life. Just don't call me. Obviously, I don't make you happy. Life's too short to be loved this wrong. So have a good life. I'm moving on. Don't apologize, just wasting your time. I hope Wichita works out for you. You're gonna need some, cause baby we're done. Today I stopped caring what you do. So have a good life, just don't call me. obviously how to make you happy. Life's too short to be loved this wrong. So have a good life, I'm moving on. Not trying to hurt you, I don't hate you, but you don't love me and I can't make you. So have a good life, just don't call me. Obviously, I don't make you happy. Life's too short to be loved this wrong. So have a good life, I'm moving on. Yeah, have a good life, I'm moving on. Said have a good life, I'm moving on.
Oh yeah.
I love it, man.
That's great.
Thank you.
Awesome song. Awesome. I was sitting there listening to it. Kevin, your mic's back on if you want it. I was sitting there thinking, you know, a lot of people come on here and play love songs. I don't think that's a love song. But then I was sitting there thinking, all right, yeah, I was totally having that, like, yeah, have a good life. And then I was sitting there wondering, I wonder how many girls have, like, are singing that song about me.
Yeah. I mean.
Yeah. It always goes both ways. You relate to it in your own way, right?
This girl wasn't like you, man. Listen, I was dating this girl, and we dated forever. And she was living in Denton, Texas at the time, and I was living in Carbondale. But I found out that she was dating, like, half of Denton, Texas.
Oh, okay.
That's the nice way of putting it. And I was like, you got to be kidding me, man. So that's where the whole thing. And I was talking to my publisher at the time.
Oh, man.
And I was like, dude, this girl, you're not going to believe her. And we ended up writing that song. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Have a good life.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me also of the Toby Keith, How You Like Me Now.
Song, yeah, there you go. Bit. Yeah. 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 It's got a little bit of that in there.
Which, if you're concerned, Denton, Texas has 113,000 people.
So, yeah. So it's not, it's you, like, know, you know,
you just put that in perspective.
Just so you guys
really
know.
Yeah.
That's why the song's awesome.
What he was trying to say, Kevin, is that he wasn't the only guy she was talking to at the time. That's really
which is
was.
Why I looked it up.
Right. Exactly.
Just yeah. Math. Yes.
Yeah.
Like 50, Logan Man, 56.5, something like that.
Golly. Hey, so talented. Awesome. I am so glad. Thank you for coming on, man.
Thank you so much for having me. I really had a great time.
I don't want to, you know, push my boundaries here, but I always ask. Would love to have you back sometime.
I would love to. I'm kind of sad it's over, so whenever, I'll come back.
Hey, well, you're more than welcome to hang out. I was going to say maybe we could eat, but I'm not going to suggest that we eat anything right now.
Hey, I've been chomping gum in this microphone for an hour, so listen, you don't...
We need plastic spoons and forks, yeah, and right. Just no paper plates.
See, I should never have said anything, but you have.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, listen, my non-legal binding legal counsel over there, Kevin Super Sick McCarty, has it on recording that you would love to come back.
Yeah.
I would love to.
Co-host as well. We're always looking for people to sit right here and actually add insight.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Ooh, that'd be fun. So, I mean, we have someone 12:30.
Yeah, you are more than welcome to hang out.
I have a meeting at 1, but otherwise I would.
We have a lot more coming, so
yeah.
We would love that. You and Blake hanging out.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because
honestly, we're just showing kind of what we get to experience in the Nashville life anyway, which is unbelievable talent like you guys hearing unbelievable songs. But at the same time, hearing a lot of these people get together in the same room and, you know, really affirm each other, which is awesome. So thanks so much, Logan. Thanks for coming in. Let's do it again, all right?
Yeah.
Thanks, bud.
This has been Hits Collecting Dust. Please support this podcast and the artists featured by going to iTunes, subscribing, and leaving us a review.